You're listening to Vatican Radio. Catholic and Anglican theologians have been meeting together near Rome to discuss ordination rites within the two churches, as well as the significant ecumenical implications of Pope Francis's recent document, Amoris Laetitia. A meeting of the Maligne Conversation Group took place from April 17th to 22nd at Rocca di Papa, south of Rome, culminating in an ecumenical evensong celebrated by Archbishop Arthur Roach of the Congregation for Divine Worship. A communique issued after the encounter said the theologians from seven different countries discussed contemporary and historic ordination rites and the developments that have taken place in both communions since Pope Leo XIII declared Anglican orders to be null and void. To find out more about the conversation and about prospects for progress in the dialogue, I spoke to one of the Catholic participants, Father Tony Currer of the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity. First of all, then, a bit about the origins, the history of this Maligne Conversation Group.
The Maligne Group started just more than 20 years after the publication of Leo XIII's famous encyclical on Anglican orders, Apostolicae Curae, and it was founded by a group of English, largely gentry, and the Bishop of Maligne, Cardinal Mercier, and it met because there seemed to be such a block on progress or on recognition of Anglican orders. It met with the approval of the Vatican and the authorities of the two archbishops of Canterbury and York to see what could be done, to see how things could be taken forward. So it was a theological investigation in the wake of what was seeming like an insuperable obstacle.
This was quite an audacious initiative, even if it did have Vatican approval, because we're 30 years or so before the Council and the opening towards ecumenism.
It is quite a remarkable development, particularly given the state positions of the Catholic Church with regard to ecumenism at that time. The Catholic Church was not involved in the new ecumenical endeavours that were beginning at the beginning of the 20th century, and really not until the Second Vatican Council. So yes, incredible, and I think it is tribute to the force of character of Cardinal Mercier, who drove it forward, and some of the very remarkable people who were involved in those first conversations.
So how would you compare that atmosphere of the 20s then with the current context in which you're meeting today?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting question. I think one of the things we have to say is that we, again, have things which look like insuperable obstacles, and when you're faced with things that you can't see a way around, you have to do a lot of exploration, and that's going to take time, and it needs to be done in an atmosphere of friendship and honesty and frankness to see where progress might be made. We know that the Lord wants us to be one. We know that we have to overcome our differences. We know that's a mandate and a demand that the gospel puts on us. So what we are responsible to do is to say, well, how is that going to happen? To open ourselves to one another and open ourselves in that to the Spirit and to his guidance in searching a way forward.
You mentioned the question of ordination, which was behind the original group meeting. And of course, today that's further complicated by the ordination of women into the priesthood and now also episcopal ordinations. Is this still, in your view, or is it today the most serious obstacle that we're facing?
Yes, it probably is one of the most serious obstacles that we are confronted with at the moment. And it is difficult to see a way forward. And that is why we're having these conversations. One of the reasons we're having these conversations is to see where we might be able to progress in mutual understanding towards some kind of agreement. That's obviously very difficult. However, it should be remembered that Unitatis Red Integratio and the documents of the Second Vatican Council recognize those elements of the Church which exist beyond the boundaries of the Catholic Church, and in a way left open something regarding ministry and how that, what implications that statement has for recognition of ministry, which since that time in our ecumenical endeavours we've been seeking to find a way of recognising to some degree. Now, it's clear that we cannot, you know, at the moment recognise priestly ministry exactly across confessional divisions, particularly because of the ordination of women. But at the same time, we do recognise that there is some ministry here. We don't think that there is nothing there. We recognise that there is something that is happening. And we have demonstrated that in all sorts of gestures and all sorts of symbols, the giving of an Episcopal ring to the Archbishop of Canterbury 50 years ago this year. Other gifts, the place that we, the honour that we afford to ministers from other churches, even when ministers move from one church to another, the way we deal with that and recognise and bring them into another church recognises at some level and respects the ministry that they had before in the church that they came from. So there is some recognition there, and our theology in some sense needs to catch up with that and to say, well, how do we put a theological underpinning under those gestures that have been made by popes and others? How does our theology kind of support that, those things which we've seen happen?
You mentioned the original bull of Leo XIII, which declared these Anglican orders null and void. And yet, over the years since the Vatican Council, particularly, many Catholic leaders have questioned that. I think of Cardinal Hume saying, it's time to look at this again. How soon do you think that may happen?
The bull and the decision that was made was based on an amount of historical research about rites used and the theological and liturgical underpinnings of those rites. There are a few ways in which some of that, in the light of further developments, historical information, have been challenged at times. There's also the fact that we recognise the orders of the old Catholic Church, and they came into full union with the Anglican Communion in, I think, the 1930s. And so some have said that, in a way, makes the whole question different, because then there's been ordinations in the Anglican Church involving old Catholics whose orders we can recognise. So it becomes a very much more complicated question, and some have seen those reasons as a way through. But as you said before, it remains difficult because of the question of the ordination of women. What statement would be helpful in this context? I think it's true to say that we don't use the language of null and void anymore. That's clearly not what is spoken by the gestures and the generosity and the warmth which we see time and time again when popes meet the Archbishops of Canterbury, and with the reception that we give to Anglican clergy when they visit us here in Rome.
You were also discussing, weren't you, at the recent meeting, the ecumenical implications, certainly of Pope Francis' gestures, but also of what he's just written about recently in the document Amoris Laetitia, for example.
Yes, in all of Pope Francis's, well, both encyclicals and apostolic exhortations, one thing which has been noted and commented upon is his repeated use and citation of the teaching documents of episcopal conferences. And Pope Francis draws heavily on those resources. And that's very interesting, because it shows a more dispersed authority, in a sense, that, or teaching authority that Pope Francis is happy to draw upon, which mirrors to some extent the much more dispersed authority structures of the Anglican Church, which are all at provincial level, because a communion of provinces. So the fact that there is a greater weight being given, greater hearing being given to the teaching of episcopal conferences is an interesting development in our own documents that Pope Francis has clearly made evident. And in many ways, that is helpful to our ecumenical conversation, because so many of the churches we dialogue with, their authority is mainly at that national, provincial level.